This is Lori Prox here with Dave Stearin, Communications and Outreach Director for Governor Dunleavy's office. And Dave, it's usually very helpful to ask you questions about the statewide dashboard for coronavirus. Of course, the numbers go up, but hospitalizations and some of those numbers include COVID patients. And then, you know, as we came to learn, not all of them are in the hospital because of COVID. They're there for another reason, but are coded a COVID patient or a case.
Or so, COVID positive, yes.
Yeah, so what? Wanted to get some numbers from you behind the scenes because you have access to some of that data and more data than you want, probably. But how do you break apart those numbers, and how is that looking? Are we some of the numbers have been looking a little better of late, right?
Well, glad to be here again. And yes, the numbers, you know, we had weeks where we had days that had 108, 109 positives. We've now dropped back into the 40 to 65 positive daily rate range. Our testing remains, you know, some of the highest by population percentage in the country. We haven't reduced the number of tests that we are performing. I mean, they increase incrementally either day to day or week to week, but we have seen a pretty consistent mellowing from, you know, the 155, 185 to probably 60, 65-ish today, 50, 55-ish yesterday. And the reason I use ish is we try to, and we are in a constant state of correction. We will go back and scrub the number from 2-3 days ago or 2 weeks ago, or we'll have somebody in another part of the country test positive that we need to include as a resident as a positive. So when we set up all of this information, because people have fallen in love with the numbers, the numbers, in an effort to be as accurate as possible, have a little bit of flux in them, because if in some states report you being positive the day you were tested, other states report the day your test results come in as being positive. And that sounds like a weird difference, but that could be the span of 3 days or 7 days. And then, of course, your state of residency has to be factored into where you're positive from. So the numbers as... And trust me when I tell you, I'm not looking at anything any different than the general public is looking at. I don't have some sort of HIPAA-violating back channel to see the numbers. But I do know consistently, in talking with the folks over at HESS and their healthcare partners across the state, the snapshot that you have at a day or at a point in time is a reference to the numbers that we have as our best idea at that particular point, always subject to change. Now the part about hospitalizations and you're COVID positive, and we've consistently stressed this, and I know you and your listeners get it, but there are challenges across the state. You could be in the hospital you know, for cancer or for a stroke or a reaction to medicine, and as part of the screening process now, you're going to get a COVID test, and you have no symptoms, you have no indicators that you have COVID, but you're tested and hospitalized with COVID. And a lot of people view that as COVID is putting people in the hospital. Now in some cases, it could be, but the vast majority of cases that we've seen, first of all of the tragic loss of life of people who had COVID, it's probably not the most accurate statement to make that COVID caused the death of these people. Medical care providers are you know, when the attending physician, for example, writes the death certificate, it is up to them. And there are, or you can, I think, three or four contributing factors to a fatality. Healthcare providers can list the contributing causes of death. And right now, just about every healthcare provider, if someone tests positive for COVID, is going to include COVID, or the patient having COVID, as a potential contributing factor. And as we deal with these numbers, and when all of this is behind us and we look back, there will be a far better methodology of categorizing and reporting these sort of instances going forward. I don't think we've had such a hyper attentive statewide or national audience on an illness as we have had with COVID-19.
And there's numbers there for hospitalizations, and I know initially a lot of concern that this summer would blow the numbers out of the water. We would be overwhelmed at our hospitals. But as we're nearing the end of summer, which I would assume there are more hospitalizations in the summer, I know here in Valdez it puts the tourism industry, and that puts a stress on and extra workers in the summer, puts a stress on our healthcare system. But as we're nearing the end of summer, is anyone breathing a sigh of relief that we have not run out of hospital beds and ventilators? And
I think everybody is. I think here's the other reality is the national response, the Alaskan response, was based on initial information that we were given by the CDC that says, you know, I remember these calls very, very early on where we thought we could have a situation which 30 to 50,000 Alaskans could be dead by the end of the year due to COVID. Now, there are parts of the state, Anchorage and Fairbanks, that still have stand-up reserve hospital bed capacity and arenas and gymnasiums that have never seen a patient. And those are all good things. But I think when you look at this state response and you look at areas like New York, in which you saw disastrous policies and disastrous numbers of deaths, in which it was state policy to move COVID-positive patients into nursing homes that directly contributed to the spread of the illness with some of the most vulnerable people, we in this state, and frankly several other states, didn't do that. We instead, with our most at-risk seniors, unfortunately isolated them from friends and loved ones. And so for the most part, aside from two very specific instances, folks in those situations were protected. It's frustrating for you know, I think it's fair to say that the biggest challenge that any agency has, whether it's state government or local government, is social media. And social media can flood a community, an individual household, with information that frankly is based on false data or a fabricated website that was stood up for the sole purpose of either a lark, a goof, or just perpetuating incorrect information. So
even comments on, you know, I think a lot of folks have set up their official page on Facebook, and the comments can go a totally different direction, and the algorithm of Facebook is to put up front the most reactive comments. So to that end, of course, these highly, highly heated debates in which people are presenting all kinds of information from all kinds of sources is what's up front and at the top.
Yeah. From a communication standpoint, COVID is frustrating because in many respects, whether it's reporters or just everyday folks flooding us with, I saw this article off a friend's page on Facebook, and they say blah 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 blah, and you're like, what are you even talking about? Where do you even get that information? And so we have to figure out the source of that and run it down, and then realize, well, this is just a goof website that somebody just read the headline, and now we're soaking up man hours trying to run this to ground to see if perhaps we've missed something. And like I said, the heightened awareness of COVID, I think, has contributed to a recent Gallup poll of enormous misperceptions as to who is the most at risk, what the morbidity rate of COVID is. Gallup just did a report and a study. The level of public misunderstanding about COVID is directly contributing to the actions and, in many cases, the public policy responses of numerous jurisdictions across the country.
I do think it also drove people together in ways to kind of unify over certain things, like, say, mask wearing. So folks are unifying over this. And at this point, I think everyone's goal is a little different with that, perhaps. And I think curbing the spread, let's flatten the curve, right? So in the state's estimation, is the curve flat, and where do we go from here?
Well, you see, I'll say today the curve is flat, and then tomorrow or 2 days later we'll have 200 positives in some part of the state, and I'll look like a complete doofus, which I think is part of my job anyway. I think when you look at the hospital capacity utilization, if that's the curve you're monitoring, that's been flat throughout. We have not seen an incredible uptick in hospital utilization. We have not seen us get into the code red bandwidth utilization of hospital beds. I mean, the governor has said, correctly so, from day one, no matter what we do, the virus is going to spread. No matter what we do, our case count positivity rates are going to go up. As we test more, we're going to find it more, but we're also going to manage our ability to respond to people who get sick. So the first phase was, well, we need more masks. Okay, so we limited procedures initially to build up the amount of PPE that we have available. Now we got a warehouse full of the darn things. The other thing, we want to slow the spread so we can stand up our healthcare response. Well, now we've got ventilators in the state, Lori, and let's see, just by guesstimate, about 258 ventilators, of which currently 28 are being used. Of those 28, four of those 28 are people who are COVID positive, and I couldn't tell you if they're on a ventilator because of COVID or they're on a ventilator because they're in the late stages of lung cancer. So you can pick whatever currency of the crown you want to say, is that the curve? Is that the curve? Is that the curve? And we believe strongly it's not the positive amount, it's the hospital capability amount. And that has been, across this state, successfully managed thus far.
And we seem to have settled on, you know, four main things for the curb of coronavirus: wear a mask, distance 6 feet, what are they? Keep your bubble, limit the exposure to other people. What am I forgetting? Wash your hands. Mm-hmm. So how could I forget? So are there other focuses or things that the state is looking at or that could be done? I know in a lot of cases there's, obviously, I guess there's other conditions that folks have. So, you know, as this drags on and on, is anyone looking toward, hey, what can we do about diabetes or all, you know, many of these contributing factors, or smoking, or is that, it seems to be kind of an isolated thing, but there's a lot of factors contributing to folks getting COVID, and then those who fare better with it or worse.
Will COVID drive people to take better care of themselves? Maybe fewer people will smoke. Maybe fewer people will.
No, I'm not wondering what people would do, because I don't know that you could speak to that. I'm just wondering, as our state government and in meetings, You know, are there, you know, I mean, long term, this is not going to be a couple more days. You know, we just kept saying, you know, next week this will be over. We'll go back to normal. You know, what does the new normal look like in terms of government regulation or, you know, mandates, whether you like it or not? The government's kind of become a, at every level, much more involved in telling people what to do. So, yeah. So, and I think, yeah, I'm just wondering, like, how long can we maintain that? I know we talked about COVID fatigue, and then, you know, are there, you're a communications person. Are there strategies to, yeah, I don't know. We're looking here locally. I'm just in my little radio station. Let's try to keep things more positive. Focus on what you can do. So I'm wondering from a communication standpoint at the state level, you know, what are your tools down the road to?
I'm sure. I think I understand the question. I'm sure that much like click it or ticket or dial before you dig, or will there be some sort of ongoing healthcare PSA initiative launched? I'm almost positive, whether it's a short or long-term campaign, that will be part of the stuff that you hear on radio or public service announcements on TV, et cetera, et cetera. The bizarreness of this, though, is, I mean, you have people running for national office who want to have a mandatory 3-month wear a mask outside law passed. The delicate balance of a response to COVID or frankly anything like this is going to be the concern that government shifts from, here's some stuff that you can do to probably help you reduce the chances of getting COVID, to we're going to draconianly enforce what you shall do and must do, and then we will determine when you will be able to stop doing that. I mean, from a civil liberty standpoint, it's terrifying, because the ease in which people can say, well, we're only doing this for your own good, well, you're doing it for the general public's own good, where 99.96% of the people who get it either won't be hospitalized or die. So the people who have heart disease have a higher morbidity rate. People who have certain forms of cancer have a higher morbidity rate. And then when you look at the aggressive actions taken by government to deal with that, well, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. The concern that this administration has is communities or government makes long-term policy based on hype. And you can look at different jurisdictions, both in and outside the state of Alaska, in which efforts were taken under the auspices of fighting the virus, and the damage to the local community, the local economy, have far more long-term adverse impacts than COVID does.
I don't think that's
frankly, at any level, under dispute right now. The old line of the cure is worse than the disease, we're going to see here in the next 60 to 90 days just how many people we, air quote, saved by destroying their ability to have a livelihood.
Well, and are there discussions behind the scene? I wonder about what government's role is in all of this. And, you know, I think we kind of, it's an emergency, so all things are off, and we can make decisions we wouldn't normally do under the scrutiny that's you know, not the scrutiny that's usually there with committees and emergency declarations and such. So I know the governor, there probably are discussions, because he's come out and said, you know, I want to put information out there and let the public make, you know, here's what our experts are putting out there, and I'm not going to mandate masks because. But in the case of, like, travel to the state of Alaska, the state is getting very involved in that and the travel. So how do you reconcile that behind the scenes? You know, what does government get involved in and what don't they? Because frankly, I think a lot of people don't have a clear picture in their head of what government's role is, you know, as evidenced by, hey, you guys should government, you know, you guys should make sure there's donuts every Friday, and you should, you know, there's a lot of expectations people have for government doing everything for them.
You know, it is amazing that when you look at the public demand of government, they want the same entity that they constantly disparage, whether it's the DMV or pick a government agency, any government agency, and in the same breath, they demand that very same monolithic institution has more control over their daily lives. And so,
If they agree,
absolutely. And so, I think what you're going to see, unfortunately, is public policy dictated by elections. You're going to see health policy dictated by elections. And you're going to see the response to proposed health policy dictated by protests and other acts of civil disobedience, which all of a sudden, protests that aren't terribly peaceful but given a hall pass will be overshadowed by peaceful protests and those folks losing their businesses or being arrested. We are on the precipice, and this is just a philosophical statement by me, we're on the precipice of a whole different dynamic of government involvement in the lives of everyday citizens that no one in January would have welcomed or anticipated.
And I think at the state level, I know that mandates were put in place about travel. So obviously, travel restricted into and out of the state of Alaska. But I think at least the administration is aware that that does have a huge impact on business. So let's go there. And I think a lot of people following Berkowitz issuing a lot of mandates and shutting down businesses. The state actually didn't give the power necessarily to the municipalities in this coronavirus, but definitely passed through the money from the CARES Act to the municipalities. And then in the case of Anchorage, his plan to spend that on homeless facilities has been challenged by the public and the federal government at this point. So, but that money was originally with the state of Alaska and could have been distributed differently. Seeing the outcome, I don't know how that's going around the rest of the state. If the other municipalities,
I will say this: out of all of the communities that has received CARES money to use in the manners put forth by the Treasury Department, only one community has had a direct visit from the Office of the Inspector General.
And from what I understand, I think KTVA did actually just a little wrap up some reporting about where they're at with that, and I guess the plan is $156 million in CARES Act money went to the municipality of Anchorage. $22.5 million has been allocated. And now their new plan, I think their main topics were, I wrote them down, economic stimulus, family support, housing and homelessness, public safety and health, community investment, municipal response. And he still is talking with, according to this article, talking with the federal government about keeping his plan to spend it on homeless and such. But the one thing that was kind of curious, I think $6 million of that $156 million is allocated towards small business and nonprofits, and $7 million for the hospitality and tourism industry. And there was some direction provided with that it was coronavirus-related CARES Act funding. So there's just numbers there. You really don't have to say much more than that. $13 million going to business, nonprofits, hospitality, and tourism of the $156 million in CARES Act. But you say around the rest of the state, you're finding municipalities are getting it into the hands of businesses and those affected nonprofits.
Yeah, let me be 100% clear. The Inspector General of the Treasury Department has only visited and had concerns about one community in the state of Alaska.
And that is a case where people are saying, hey, Governor, do something about it. But are you auditing any of that money?
This administration will take whatever steps the Inspector General's Office of the Treasury Department instructs us to take once they have a formal decision or action regarding a community's use of portions of the CARES money.
Up on what the other municipalities are doing with that money and requiring anything? Because I know we talked about this initially, and I was like, what directions did you give with that money?
From the Treasury, we added no additional stipulation requirements. Each community that received the funds signed an agreement with the state of Alaska that they will use the funds in accordance with the guidelines put forth by the Department of Treasury, or the Treasury Department, and that if they are to run afoul of any of those guidelines, that they will be responsible for returning those funds to the state of Alaska, as we would be responsible for returning a portion of those funds to the federal government. They won't be reallocated, they will be taken away. And I just not to put too fine of a point on this, of all the communities that have received this $480 million, the Office of the Inspector General has only visited one.
Well, all right. Well, that was a great... right, yeah.
But, yeah. I mean, in regards, of course, to the governor stepping in and do it, no. There are certain laws in the state of Alaska based on the classification of a city. First of all, this governor believes that government closest to the people governs best and should be responsive to the concerns of people in that jurisdiction. And so, quite honestly, aside from some legislators wanting to play politics with a bill that they overwhelmingly voted to affirm, we have had the vast majority of communities across the state, including Southeast, work with their local leadership, and the Office of the Inspector General hasn't called them once.
All right, so let's switch gears here. Travel, we touched briefly on travel requirements and requirements in the new mandate in and out of Anchorage. So can we touch on that, and then also how contact tracing is going statewide?
Sure, yeah, we can wrap it up on that. Absolutely.
All right. Well, how's the travel mandate? It seems like there's a little, as rules change, seems like a few people get caught in the crosshairs coming or going. So I think important, I want to make sure we put it out there. If you're coming back to Alaska, Alaskans, I just wrote this down from the website, must submit a travel declaration or self-isolation plan and arrive with a negative test, or they can self-isolate for, I think it's 14 days. And Alaskans, a difference is that the state will pay for Alaskans coming back to Alaska, whereas people from out of state can't have the test here in Alaska, but are required to have it prior to coming and at their own expense. Did I get that?
Yeah, for the purposes of residents of Valdez and state of Alaska, if you leave the state and come back, because you're not going to be able to find a test as easily as you can in the state of Alaska, just far more difficult, frankly. We will cover the cost of that test for you. That's part of the federal CARES money that we received that Hess has been managing. And you'll get a test, and then since Alaska, pretty much across many parts of the state, if you're bored, you can go get another test in 3 days. A lot of folks are just doing that. A lot of folks are doing it because they don't want to be the person at work or at home that gets their family sick. So that has been working quite well. And frankly, for people who are coming here from a different part of the country, when the federal government told 2.2 million people you can't come to the state of Alaska, we're now managing a daily arrival rate somewhere between 3,900 and 4,300 folks a day into Anchorage, smaller amounts into other airports. Yeah, we want to make sure that if you're coming here from outside the state of Alaska on your apply to folks coming up to recreate, because if you're coming up to work, businesses have a plan on file with the state, and to make sure that our in-state turnaround test time isn't 14 days but 4 days or less, we're trying to manage just how many people are in the queue for getting their test results back.
And is that going faster now that you're not doing it for free?
As it is, Alaska is going to be here, and if folks decide that they don't want to travel this year to Alaska because of COVID or because we're asking you to take a test to help protect our medical infrastructure, once the vaccine comes out, they can come up here and have a grand old time. I'm sure our numerous businesses, if they survive any of this, will be glad to have them.
Do you see those travel restrictions decreasing as the majority of our tourism is obviously summer here in Alaska? So I don't recall the date that travel mandate runs through. Is it September or something?
I think it's early or mid-September ballpark.
Are there plans at this point to extend that or no idea?
Right now, I'm not aware of any plans to adjust the date one way or the other. Of course, part of the mandate travel restrictions are also predicated on the advancement, introduction of a vaccine or other treatment options that currently aren't available or haven't been certified yet. So everything is subject to change, but as we are right now, aside from a few folks, a micro minority of travelers who are still coming to the state being peeved or having to change their plans. For the vast majority of folks coming here, it's not the state's fault, it's COVID's fault, and most people get that.
How is contact tracing going?
Better. At least on a state level, and it appears that even some of our larger communities have gone from they can't fully facilitate contact tracing to they have a handle on contact tracing, and that turnaround's been within a week or so. So I contact tracing, part of it is the cooperation of individuals who test positive. If you're someone who, throughout COVID, you could probably count on one or two hands the people you associate with regularly aside from the grocery store, it makes contact tracing pretty easy. So that is far more critical to helping contact tracing than the number of people administratively performing that function.
All right. And much like me, coronavirus was not a part of my life prior to this year. And it's not something, it's not something I get directly paid to cover. And my news coverage has ramped up quite a lot. And a lot of folks are in that boat where all their expenses have gone up because dealing with the different variations of coronavirus. And we're more similar because it's monopolizing our time and our communications airwaves and outlets. But I wanted to take a moment because in addition to your regular job, much like me, I have to run a radio station, sell ads, entertain people, play music, but you have other duties as well, the governor's office. So can I ask you about other business? There's been some oil and gas news. I thought I'd give.
Oh my
some
God! You mean there's life
that.
Beyond COVID?
Yes, I thought I needed.
Isn't it lovely? Isn't it lovely that in the hurly burly of everything else that lease sales have been approved in the 1002? Isn't it lovely that for all of the doom and gloom scenarios, the commercial fishing season occurred, it operated, revenue was generated, and the vast majority of the fisheries operated without any problems or challenges? Isn't it amazing that the supply chain network that we thought was going to be critically damaged in March has been operating near flawlessly across the state? I mean, there's a lot of very, very, very good news, even though today is a primary election day, which usually drowns out any other news anyway.
Well, yeah, if you dig deep enough, but I want you to know, I did find it, saw it, heard it. So, definitely that'll probably be a focus of the administration moving forward is keep on moving. There's a lot of work to do beside COVID. So, hopefully we'll incorporate some of that information. And that is one of those things. It's an election year. And every year, when people call me, hey, well, I want free this and free this and free airtime and this and that, I say, you know what, once you get elected, why don't you meet with me once a month or once a week or, provide some updates and be happy to have you on there. But, ironically, after the election's over, I don't really have too many regular updates. So
I wasn't the only one that they ghosted? when I had my show. They, everybody wants to be the radio host's best friend, and then the election's over and they want nothing to do with you.
For me,
it was always school board candidates. School board candidates always wanted to come on my old show, and then they vanished.
You know what? I've had a, I have a great, the schools, the superintendent's been coming in for the last 3 years anyways, and two different superintendents every other week. We've actually upped that to twice a week. So I really appreciate that. And I appreciate having a face to an entity and an organization. And I have to say, I did have John Harris did a monthly on-air interview with me. But that's in 20 years of this show, doing this this news thing. I appreciate that. So anyhow, yeah, it's fun to hear some different news and big plans for some of that moving forward. I mean, that's a lot of work. Some of these projects that the state is looking into and working on, right?
Yeah, of course, because everything is subject to the whims of a national election. A different administration in Washington, D.C., just as quickly as we're all celebrating the approval of lease sales in the 1002, all of that could be ripped away from Alaska on January 20th of 2021.
All right, and that's if the election, well, we'll see how that goes.
Yes.
All right, we'll end on
that. I think
that
it's fair to say by both sides' press clippings that one side will continue to push the development of ANWR forward and another side will not.
All right, and definitely, yeah. We'll address that a little deeper maybe another time, but thanks for joining us once again.
Always a pleasure. We'll chat with you next week.
All right.